and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances, and I'll be your hostess. Hello, and welcome to episode 202, the much later than usual episode. I have been trying to get this episode done and up for a couple of weeks now, and I don't quite know why I'm having the trouble I'm having. Partly I haven't been doing quilt diaries. And so usually by the time I'm ready to post, I actually have ready-made material because I made it and it was ready for me to use it. But I haven't been doing quilt diaries, so that's a problem. And in fact, there will be no quilt diaries. I'm just talking to you today. And hopefully I will be talking to you coherently and cohesively and all the other codes that we need for us to have a working podcast. So why the long wait? I don't know. I wasn't doing very much. You know, I feel like, I mean, I've been doing a lot. I've been really busy and just not on quilts per se. I have finally finished quilting the baby quilt. The baby's been born. Boy, came in at 10 pounds, over 10 pounds. Tiny mom. Don't want to hear the story. Like, don't tell me a thing. Don't want any post-traumatic stress. My baby's actually about 8 pounds, and I'm not tiny the way that Pamela, the mom of the new baby for whom I've made this quilt, is tiny. Any event, done quilting, just have to do the binding and the giving, which I hope to do this week. I hope to have it bound by tomorrow. I have to tell you, I've had a bug, and it's a pernicious bug. It's not a terrible flatten you on the ground kind of bug, but last Tuesday, I was about to go to the gym, and all of a sudden I thought, wow, my throat really hurts. And it was just like kind of getting whomped upside the head. And I have functioned fairly well, but I've still got it, and I'm still kind of just worn out by it, and my throat is still kind of sore. Jack was the one who brought it into the house, and he missed a day of school, which is fairly unusual for him, and then revived and went back to school the next day, etc., etc. And then yesterday, it was like it hit him again. And this is the difference between me and Jack. I should tell you, it's Monday, December, gosh, I have no idea what that makes it. December 19th, I'm fairly sure. Difference between me and Jack. Jack legitimately ill yesterday. Fever, sore throat, tired. Still studied for his Latin exam and still got up this morning and took it. I would have taken that get out of Latin exam free card faster than anything. You know, I just would like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm sick. And I would have been legit. He could have legitimately not taken the exam today. So, hey, speaking of Jack, although this is going to get me off topic of why so late, et cetera, and me being sick, which I know you wanted to hear a lot more about, but Jack got into college. That's our big news. He applied early decision to Davidson College. It's a very small liberal arts college outside of Charlotte. Very well, highly regarded, smart kid school, and Jack's a smart kid, and he got in. Hooray! So that means that the application process is over, and he's going to college. Of equal value, perhaps. Okay, he's going to college, more important. And I should say, I'm getting a lot of like, oh, I bet you're happy to be done with all this. And I have to say that I had very little involvement in this process whatsoever, other than last fall of 2015, telling the man and Jack, why don't y'all go look at Davidson College and see what you think? And it's about 2.5 hours from us. So they did. And Jack thought a lot of it, and he really liked it, and has actually gone back a couple times to the campus to hang out and go to classes and all kinds of stuff. So that was my role. Jack actually did the whole application thing, with the exception of the financial aid papers, and the man did those. No one in their right mind would leave me in charge of the financial aid forms. But yeah, we did nothing. And partly this has to do with Jack's school. Well, you know, it's a college prep school, and so they're very good at prepping the kids and walking them through their applications and making sure that everybody is where they need to be and have submitted their scores and done all that stuff. So that was really helpful and worth all the Paris vacations I never got to take. 4 more years, baby. Eight years, really. Get Will through high school and college, and then I'm Paris every weekend. Too bad they stopped flying the Concorde, because I could use that going. But yeah, so Jack got in college. Yay. But yeah, he did it. He really did a lot of that work and most of that work. And I did none of it except make useful suggestions. And now I'll go to Parents Weekend. Yay. And I actually never went. The man took Jack on the tours. And I hear it's a lovely campus. So, and a lot of my mother-in-law's family lives in that area. So we went to the Randolph Christmas party this weekend. It was a little odd, a little sad, because it's the first one that we had not been to with Melvin, my mother-in-law, who passed away in August. Lovely party. And everyone had heard that Jack got into Davidson, and they were very excited. And, you know, Uncle Richard's got a condo in Gastonia, which is fairly close by, and we could use that. And everyone's like, oh, just let us know if Jack needs anything, because we could be there in a minute. I'm like, excellent. Excellent. We've got you surrounded, Mr. Jack Dow. So that's big news. It's almost Christmas for those of us who observe Christmas. I know not everyone does who listens to this podcast. For those of us who observe, I hope you're feeling the Christmas spirit. I'm sick. See, back to me being sick. You knew I'd bring it back around to that, to me. And I don't really feel that bad. The frustrating thing is I feel just tired enough that it's like, oh, instead of kind of going, oh, you know, I'm going to do some baking today, or I'm going to do some wrapping. And I don't love baking and I don't love wrapping, but there's something very nice about, you know, the week before Christmas when you're doing those Christmassy things that imbues the activity with some specialness and warm feelings. But now I'm just like, where's the gift bag? Where's the gift bag, Martha? Yeah, because that's about all I got in me. But we still—it's 6 days away. I think we're going to have one of those trees that is scarcely populated until a couple days before Christmas. Because Lord knows my children have not done any Christmas shopping or given any thought to gifts for anyone else. Because I've done a really poor job of raising them. Sorry, it's true. They're generally nice children, but when it comes to gifts, I have failed. Table manners, they're pretty good, okay? Buying gifts for other people, horrible, horrible. And I own that. I should have pushed that. It was just one of the things I decided not to prioritize, which I'm sure I will regret for every Mother's Day that they actually are not living in this house. I'll think, oh man, I should have gotten them to be better about giving presents. Anywho. So we're coming down the stretch. I don't know if I'm done with my shopping or not. I'm feeling a little cloudy. I'm sure some clarity will come in, you know, the next 3 days as I start panicking. I realize that, you know, why I don't like Christmas is that, A, I get sick almost every Christmas. I think that's part of it. And two is the errands. You know, and errands always take at least 20 minutes more than you thought they would. And half the time you're going to places and they don't have what they should have. What everyone's like, oh, go there, they'll have it, and they don't have it. And then you're thinking, well, maybe I'll just try this other place because that they'll probably have it. And I say this as someone who does most of my shopping online. Thank you for Amazon Prime. But at Christmas you end up doing a little bit more running around, and I don't have good shopping luck. So that is part of it. That is part of my issue with the Christmas thing. But Boxing Day. Love Boxing Day. The food is made. The wine's been uncorked. We got Chex Mix. That's all I asked for. December 26th. How I love you. All right, so I told you. Quilting, because this is a quilting podcast. It's not the All About Me podcast, although I'm sure you would just enjoy that equally as well. Binding the baby quilt. Plan to make that happen in the next 48 hours. And I do enjoy binding. I'm hoping that Colin, our young associate pastor, will be in his office this week so I can just take it over there. And then I will win the prize for actually giving someone a baby quilt within, say, the first month of the baby being born. And then I am going to work on this is my plan, and I have until, I believe, Thursday to do this, make some canvas totes for my writing workshop girls. These are four girls I meet with every Saturday and who I adore. And I've got the idea from Minky Kim and Kristen Esser's book, So Illustrated, to do canvas totes, and they're darling little iron-ons of typewriters that I'm going to iron on, if I can actually figure out how to do that. That's what I'm going to work on this afternoon. The other news I have to share with you is that I got into QuiltCon. I have two quilts going to QuiltCon in Savannah 2017. I'm going to QuiltCon 2017 as well, so I'll visit my quilts while they're there. And that's exciting and a little terrifying. It really is. You know, the funny thing is, I remember when this topic came up around the last QuiltCon, which was in February of this year, 2016, and then there was all the stuff about my brother's genes, and so we talked about it and got discussed in many, many forums. And I think on the Twilters group on Facebook, you know, there were a number of people said, you know, I would not enter a quilt show for this very reason, that if you actually, so, you know, it was almost the fear of getting in was as big as the fear of rejection. And your fear of rejection is interesting, because I kind of assumed at that time, it's like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and enter some quilts. And it was fun to think about doing that. And, you know, Crystal Watson has recently written about this on her blog, you know, why enter quilt shows. One, it gives you a goal, you know, to finish up a show-worthy quilt by this date. And I liked that idea as well. Like, I'm going to try it. And what does it matter to me? This is not my central identity. Is not as a quilter, it's as a writer. Although quilting is a very big part of my life, but I'm not a professional quilter. This won't in any way affect my professional career. So it certainly wouldn't be that. And, you know, as a writer, I get reviewed on Amazon and in trade publications and Goodreads. And so I'm just used to being, I'm used to being rejected, you know, but essentially what would, you know, feeling like, oh, to be rejected by QuiltCon, to not get in that show would not be a huge deal. But what was very interesting to me is once I submitted the application, I mean, within 5 minutes of submitting it, I felt kind of nervous and anxious. And I thought, you know, doesn't matter what you're entering, whether it's you're sending a manuscript off to an editor or a quilt off to a jury, that fear of exposure and fear of rejection is very primal. You know, so I can think all my brave thoughts that I want, but the fact is, once I press that send button, I got nervous. And by the time, the turnaround was very quick, because the quilts were due the 30th and the announcements were made, I'm going to say, the 15th or 16th. So they did it in 2 weeks. And the first email I got was a rejection, and that was for Paper Birds in the Air, which kind of straddled modern. I feel like you could call that a modern quilt, but you could also say, you know, sort of depends on your definition of modern. But so I wasn't hugely surprised to see that rejected. And I also kind of wasn't that sad about it, you know, because and I just waited for the other rejections, you know, and I thought, well, it's okay. You know, that's too bad. But I waited, and I sort of refreshed my email every few minutes waiting to get those other two quilts rejected. And then I got two emails in a row that said congratulations. And this was on Modern Birds in the Air and Bauhaus Birds in the Air. And I feel like, you know, I'm really pleased about, well, obviously I'm very pleased about both. I'm surprised, and I don't say that to be overly modest. I'm the Bauhaus Birds in the Air, I felt had a shot because of the design. And it's not my design. It's from a 1920s poster, and my friend Adele, who at the time was not my friend, was just someone who listened to my podcast, volunteered to do the paper piecing pattern, which made her immediately my friend, and she did a fantastic job. And so it's a striking quilt, but it's not original on my part, so I can be braggy. Yeah, it's a great design. It is. It's a very striking design. So I felt like that might have a chance. And it also, there's something that is strikingly modern. And that's what I was looking for when I went and I Googled Bauhaus posters. Because I feel like there's something about, you know, there's similar properties to the Bauhaus design aesthetic and the modern aesthetic. The Modern Birds in the Air was a little bit more surprising. Although it's a quilt I like very much, and I'm happy, because that was a quilt where I got a lot of input from friends. You know, I did a lot of the design on the Tolters group. I would put stuff up, and Vicky in particular from My Creative Corner 3 was really, really helpful in giving me feedback. But everybody did. And the hard part was when the feedback conflicted. Like, people were like, I think you should put a border there. No, put one. But, you know, that was great. So that I like that because it feels like a collaborative effort in its way. Certainly getting that feedback during the design process was tremendously useful and fun. And so that pleases me a lot that quilt got accepted. I am going to be doing some re-quilting. There is some unacceptable quilting on that quilt, and so I will be picking out some stitches and redoing it and blocking it and trying to make it presentable. It is a little scary. Well, okay, so after the emails went out, there, you know, people started, first of all, posting on Instagram, either, you know, QuiltCon 2017 for quilts that made it in, and then also QuiltCon Reject. Now, when you look at the QuiltCon Rejects on Instagram, it's really interesting because there's so many quilts that you're like, wow, that didn't make it in. Now, there's some quilts you look at and, you know, that they're not as surprising, but there are definitely quilts that I saw that I just thought were marvelous quilts. And, you know, 1,500 quilts were submitted, 300 were picked. So that's got to be a hard job. And clearly it was. When you see quilts that didn't make it, that must have been a really hard choice. And again, not to be overly modest or falsely modest, but there were quilts I saw that I felt were, you know, going, huh. If I had one of my quilts in that quilt in front of me, I think I would have picked that quilt, you know, in a total unbiased way. But again, I don't think it's that simple. There were, as far as quilts that got in, there are so many stunning quilts, as again, to make one nervous, going, yeah, I think that's a lot better than what I did. You're like, okay, I hope my quilt's not hanging up next to that quilt at the show, at the exhibit, because if it is, I'm in a lot of trouble if people start comparing and contrasting. I will say there were some quilts that got in where I was a little bit like, really? And there's one quilt that was weird because it wasn't that it was a terrible quilt. None of the quilts that got in, I didn't think, wow, that's terrible. But I didn't think they were as remarkable as some of the QuiltCon rejects I saw. But like one, it was like, did you not iron that quilt out before you took a picture of it? It was very odd. So, you know, and I would say there may be three or four at the most of the quilts that I've seen that got in where I was just like, huh, interesting choice. But again, don't know the process. I wasn't on the jury. And, you know, I mean, it's obviously, part of me is like, man, I think the jury did an excellent job because they picked two of my quilts, but I think mostly they had a very hard job. There was some reaction. There were people, there were some very lovely and kind of sad posts. People on Instagram was like, this is my QuiltCon reject, and this is, you know, I love this quilt, and it means a lot to me, and I'm really sad that it didn't make it in. And but there were also, and this is more on a Facebook page, that it's a private group. I think it's Postmodern Quilting. It's easy enough to join. You just ask, and eventually you get in. And there was a lot of pushback. Now, partly, I think, because this is a group where people are making quilts that are, experimental is not quite the right word. But the quilts that occupy an interesting place, they're not necessarily art quilts, although some of them are. They're not necessarily modern quilts. There's a lot of play going on. There's a lot of improv going on. You do see a lot of they're just, you know, but anyway, it's some really neat quilts, and that's actually why I joined, because I wanted to see pictures of the quilts and see what people are doing. And some people posted who were very upset, and very upset with the Modern Quilt Guild, like primarily on the grounds that they feel the Modern Quilt Guild has defined that aesthetic of modern and has kind of stolen it in a way, or has, you know, claimed it in a way that's inappropriate. And if you follow Katie at Katie's Quilting Corner, she recently, I think just last week, interviewed an anonymous Instagram person who goes by Quilts Without Leaders, who's very anti-Modern Quilt Guild. And I haven't listened to the whole interview, but the part that I did listen to, she does talk about that. The fact that the Modern Quilt Guild has a copyright on the name, the Modern Quilt Guild, so that you can't just start your own Modern Quilt Guild. That if you do, that's a copyright violation. But I think, again, the larger concern is who gets to say what's modern. Well, and the fact is that when it comes to QuiltCon, that exhibit, the Modern Quilt Guild, it's their show. They finance it with our dues, true enough. But, they say. And, you know, I don't know. It's interesting because I find conflicts like that interesting because they're kind of gossipy and fun, but I don't think they actually add up to much. It's like, you know, most people are going to make the quilts they're going to make, and my feeling is if you want to change things, you have to get involved and, you know, get a voice in things. And so if there are a number of people who want to be a part of the Modern Quilt Guild and want to be in QuiltCon but feel that the Modern Quilt Guild is too narrow in its concerns and its aesthetic, well, the way you change that is you get on the board. The stuff that kind of tickles me is there's a lot of talk about the Modern Quilt. It's just a bunch of mean girls, and they just take care of each other, and it's the same people in QuiltCon every year. I'm like, not this year, honey, because I wasn't there last year. I don't suspect I'll be there next year, but this year. So I don't want to be, I don't want to negate anyone's experience, but it is interesting to me that immediately it becomes about sort of this mafia. It's almost like in some of the comments, it's sort of like it's Modern Quilt Guild as the KGB. It's like, be careful what you say because they'll come get you. I mean, there really was that if you say anything negative, they will ruin your life. And I thought, does the Modern Quilt Guild really have that kind of power? Because, you know, that's interesting to me. But mostly, I don't know, I should listen to the rest of Katie's interview. Katie, by the way, is like a good interviewer. But it is in this day and age. I don't know. I mean, I think it's to some extent you kind of get caught up in that stuff because it's kind of fun to get caught up in it. Because I don't know to what extent it matters or doesn't matter. I mean, it's sort of like that with, I say this as someone with an MFA in poetry. When you get into those small ponds, it does matter who has power, and people do privilege their friends. There's no doubt about it. And the people who win the awards are often handed those awards by their friends. So that's a very human thing. And particularly in smaller ponds where judgment of what is excellent is not certainly not entirely arbitrary, but there is, let's call it the 10% arbitrary rule, which is at some point it comes down to taste, it comes down to who you know, it comes down to politicking, and that really does exist. And and it's one of the reasons that I'm not in a university. That when I got my MFA in poetry, I loved it. I loved my program. I loved my classmates, many of whom I'm still in touch with, and I had a great time. But I did not love the system because there's just not a lot of money in poetry. So in the university, those to get a teaching position in MFA program is very, very hard. And there is politicking involved, and I'm terrible at that. I am not good at that. So I'm not surprised that there is chatter about politics in the Modern Quilt Guild, because I assume there are some. But right now, I'm a big fan. And I should say, I love my local chapter, and who I found to be very welcoming and very accepting of whatever quilt you bring in. And people all the time come in. I mean, I've only been to about 5 meetings, but every meeting someone's like, well, this isn't really a modern quilt. And everyone's like, who cares? Show us your quilt. So I have very positive feelings. But again, people have different stories. I will say this, that there was enough chatter about how, I saw some of those quilts that got in. I was looking at the quilts that made it into the show, and I thought the ones that did make it were so much better. And somebody wrote in a comment on, I think the Postmodern Quilt Group, sort of like, I can't wait to go to QuiltCon in Savannah and point out all the quilts that shouldn't have gotten into the show. There was so much of that chatter. I kind of felt like a little bit diminished, like, so my quilts really aren't good? Because I thought they were kind of cute. But that is just life in the village, I guess. But I find it diverting, and I am very pleased by getting the quilts in. I'm very, as always, warmed and made happy by the support of my clique, which is you guys. You are my clique. That's what people say. Oh, the monoquilt is so cliquish. I'm like, my clique lives in Radio Land, and sometimes when I'm really lucky, a member of my clique comes through town and we get to go have coffee. But, you know, I don't know. I think most of us are just having fun, and that's how it should be. But the other thing I wanted to tell you about, this is going to be a fairly short episode, and then I'll see you in the new year and get back on a regular broadcasting schedule. I wanted to tell you about my new favorite magazine, which I'm actually getting for Christmas as a subscription from my younger brother. It's called Uppercase. Have you seen this? I'm really excited about this magazine, which I had I knew about. I feel like the editor, Janine Fogelsang, was a QuiltCon judge, or maybe, who knows, maybe this is all on my working on my subconscious, because she's going to be a QuiltCon judge, and I hope she listens to my podcast so that she will love me, and no, believe me. But anyway, I learned about Uppercase around the time of the last QuiltCon. And so I feel like somehow she's been a judge for QuiltCon show, and she was sort of the non-quilter. And so I remember looking at Uppercase online and going, oh, I don't know. I mean, it looks good, but... And, you know, I love magazines, and I'm still very sad about Quilters Newsletter, because I love magazines that have real content, and I'm not looking at quilting magazines for patterns. So... there are plenty of great patterns in quilting magazines. There are plenty of mediocre patterns in quilting magazines, I guess. But I'm not looking at them for that. Actually, I think I've talked about this, but the last issue of Quilter's World I looked at, I thought the patterns were fabulous. Like, some of the best magazine patterns I've seen in a long time. But, so sad about the loss of Quilter's Newsletter. Always looking for a good magazine. One of the things about Uppercase is it's expensive. It's like $15 an issue. And I was like, do I really want to, you know, pay $15 and it's just going to be pictures and lightweight articles? No, I don't want to do that. And then recently, Abby Glassenberg and her weekly newsletter, which I always love, mentioned Uppercase and linked to it. And I can't remember why she mentioned it, but I thought, I'm going to look at this one more time. And I went over and signed up for the Uppercase magazine newsletter. I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll get a better idea of what this magazine is about. And one of the first newsletters came out, or I got an email or something once I was on their list saying all our stuff is half price. And so I thought, well, this would be a good time then to check out the magazine. So I got episode issue 30, and it was fabulous because it actually has content. It has tons of content. It has tons of pictures. It's a beautiful magazine, although I have to say, as a 52-year-old woman whose eyes are getting worse by the day, I do have to say the print is tiny. Tiny, and a lot of it is like 8 point. I think I'm looking at it now. Some of it is 8-point print. Just like, I really can't do that. But so to tell you something about it, so that it's Uppercase Magazine for the creative and curious. That's its tagline. Let's see. I'm trying to look and see if I see something that says very succinctly what Uppercase Magazine is. Essentially, it's kind of a showcase magazine for different artists and craftspeople. There is a very strong emphasis on graphic designers and illustrators and typewriters. They've actually done Jeanine Fogel's. No, I keep saying Fogelsang. It's Van Gool. I don't know why I say Fogelsang, because I like saying Fogelsang. It's Van Gool. Jeanine Van Gool is the editor. I'm sorry about that. She's actually she collects old typewriters and has written a book about them. So, yes, there's all kinds of stuff going on here. There are a lot of articles, and the articles are about particular makers for the most part. And it's beautiful and it's interesting, and I have been getting some back issues that I have found on eBay or Amazon for fairly good prices. And so I just got issue 28, which is all about illustration. And so, you know, I'm not an illustrator, but I love illustration. I particularly love picture book illustration, and it's just lovely. But they actually have good articles that go into depth about, you know, I mean, so one of the articles was about, you know, the tags that if you ever went to camp, which I never did, but, you know, you can get these tags made to put in your clothing, your kids' clothes, that with their name. So there was just an article about the sort of the last company in Australia that made these name tags. And I find stuff like that really interesting. And at least two or three other people do, apparently, because there was an article about that in Uppercase. There's an article about this really interesting sculptor. Her piece is on the cover of issue 32, and it's a wooden quilt sculpture, and it's made out of pieces of discarded wood from houses that have fallen down or been destroyed. The one on the cover is from pieces of wood from houses from the Jersey Shore that were destroyed during Hurricane Sandy. And the amazing thing is they're very colorful, and she says she doesn't paint anything. She uses the wood as she finds it. And again, an in-depth article, and it's not a lifestyle article. And I realize that's one of the things. I had an email discussion with a friend about this magazine, which she had looked at it online, but she felt like it would make her feel anxious to actually get it, you know, and see all these people doing really interesting work. And I get that. If this were a book about children's book writers, I would feel the same way. Not that I'm not doing interesting work, but it's hard not to sort of compare and contrast, and how successful are they, and, you know, who's paying attention to them, and wait a minute, I'm not in that magazine, you know, all that stuff that comes up. But what I really like about the issues of Uppercase that I've seen so far is that there is no lifestyle photography. What I really liked in the illustrators issue was that all the illustrators, like, they drew pictures of themselves. That was very cool. But there's none of that lifestyle photography that makes you kind of look at the pictures and go, why isn't my living room that clean? Why isn't my living room flooded with light? Why aren't my children that cute? Why don't I have that cool, funky thing on the wall? You know, and there's something about them that I think it's on purpose, that provokes anxiety, right? It just is hard not to compare yourself to other people, especially if, you know, if you're raising a family too, and yet your house looks nothing like that house, and your kids are, you know, nothing like all of that. There's none of that in Uppercase, which I really appreciate. And there are a lot of pieces written by artists and crafters themselves in the first person. And for the most part, they're good. I've looked at an earlier issue, where, you know, where some of the first person stuff, I was like, yeah, that's not very interesting. But what's also interesting to look at, as I've looked at four or five issues over the course of the magazine's life, and now it's on issue 32, is how much better it's gotten, how you can see the editor's vision for it and kind of become manifest. And now it's ad-free, which is really nice. Anyway, I know I'm going on and on about this magazine, which is primarily about design. But as quilters, particularly if you're trying to expand your own creative vision as a quilter, particularly if you are trying to design your own patterns. I just feel like anything that we do that feeds our muse, that feeds our creativity, is really good. And so I've been reading these in the morning before I take the boys to school, and it just makes me excited, and it makes me excited to work on quilts. It gives me all kinds of ideas for this and that, and it's been really fun and energizing. So you can go online, you can go on eBay. People are sell back issues on eBay and on Amazon, or you can just go to the Uppercase store, and the back issues are not expensive. So I just wanted to share that with you because I find it creatively exciting. I'm excited looking into the new year, and now what I'll be doing in the very beginning of the new year is getting these quilts ready to go to QuiltCon. But I've got some ideas for some other quilts, and I look forward to working on those and doing who knows what, as you never know where the year is going to take you. But I look forward, I'm going to get some very serious work done this spring, hopefully finish a draft this spring of the next quilt novel, the next Sweet Anne's Gap novel, we'll call it that. And that actually is going to be starting in January. That will be my big focus, is getting a draft written of that before I go back to some children's projects that I'm also working on. I am trying to think. I've been actually looking at picture books. My dream that will never come true is that I would love to be a picture book illustrator, but I don't. Those are not skills that I possess. I'm not an illustrator. I love illustration and I love art, but I'm not a visual artist other than with quilts. And even that seems to be really inflating what I do, but that's the closest I'll get to it. That's kind of what I mean. But I do love children's books. And so sometimes I think about, I read a lot of picture books cause I do love the illustration. And I'll tell you, one of the most beautiful books I've looked at recently that's a picture book is called Before Morning. And the illustrator is a woman named, I think it's Beth, let's see, I've got it here, Beth Kromes, Krommes. And she does, I think it's called Scratchboard, her style of illustration. I would highly, highly recommend that book if you like illustration, if you like children's picture books, if you have a child or a grandchild who might enjoy something like that. That's what I would recommend to you. I am currently reading Mr. Ives' Christmas by the same person who wrote The Mambo King Sings Songs of Love, and that's not even the right title for that. I'm sorry. I'm blanking on the author, but the book is lovely. It's sort of been my Advent read, and it is about Christmas and about New York City and about a really wonderful man named Mr. Ives, and it's kind of his life story. And I've been reading it at night before I go to bed, and I really have enjoyed it. The other book that I'm reading, I haven't finished, I'm about halfway through, and I saw referenced, I'd never heard of it, but I saw referenced in Uppercase. See, that's the other thing about a magazine like Uppercase. It will send you into different directions, but I'm kind of going to look this up because it's called, I believe it's called White Elephants by a writer named Kate, it's like Hegeli. I'll put a link to it if I remember, but it's about she and her mother. It's nonfiction, it's a memoir, and she and her mother go to rummage sales all the time, and she writes about that. And I didn't, you know, I actually got it as an interlibrary loan, although it's, you can get it cheaply used, and it's really quite wonderful. But I didn't, I guess the reason why I didn't buy it, even though I could get it cheap, was, you know, one, I'm trying not to just buy indiscriminately, even if I can get a book for, you know, for $4 off Amazon, because I'm running out of shelf space. But also, it was one of those things that's like, it could be good and it could be horrible. It could be, you know, the way that, you know, the reviews were describing it kind of made it sound like it could be kind of light and airy and stupid, but it's really cool. I am not a yard sale person myself. I like antique stores and I like flea markets. I never get over to the flea market at the Raleigh Fairgrounds, but I do like where any place where you might be able to find something kind of funky and weird. But here's the problem is that I don't love to shop, so I really would need to be looking for something specifically. Okay, here it is. It's called White Elephants on Yard Sales, Relationships, and Finding What Was Missing. The author is Katie Hegele, H-A-E-G-E-L-E, and her voice is quirky but real. So it's not quirky and cute. It's quirky and real, and I just found myself liking her a lot as a person. I think that she's Catholic, which I'm not Catholic, but there's something about interesting to me the way she hints at a religious life, but without going into it, that I find kind of neat and mysterious. And the stuff that she buys is not stuff I would buy, but I like that she buys it, and I feel like I'm kind of buying it with her. You know, she just gets all this stuff for 50 cents. Like, oh, I found a little owl plaque. Or, you know, just little things that you could see if you had one of those. In this book, she's probably in her early 30s. I think I always wanted to have that kind of apartment, you know, where it was just all quirkiness and nostalgia and camp, but I'm too messy. I can't pull that off because of a messiness problem. So I'm very much enjoying that. And so if this sounds at all like it would appeal to you, if you're into, yard sales, garage sales, rummage sales, or just that kind of shopping, or if you just like a memoir with a good voice, it's worth it. I would even recommend buying it. But you can get it through interlibrary loan. I did. My copy came from a library in Idaho, which I just think is super cool. So that's what I'm reading right now, along with all these back issues of Uppercase, which I don't think I've done a great job of describing to you. But I'm really excited by it and enjoying it. And it's beautiful. So it gives me good pictures to look at and good content and that goes into depth. You know, and not just about labels for children's clothes, which I think I very much did not sell anybody on. But buy a copy. Find it on sale or get a copy from eBay if you think you would like it. If you like stuff about people making stuff. If you like stuff about people making stuff, yeah, this is your magazine. All right, I'm fading. I need to go make some tote bags. I hope you have a lovely holiday season. I hope you'll leave a comment and say hello. And I hope everything in the world for you. I do. And let's be a clique. Let's be the nice girl clique. Let's be powers for good in this world. And let's move on into 2017 full of hope and vigor. All right, then. I'll talk to you soon. Okay, P.S. here. One, I want to tell you that I just finished listening to Katie's interview with Kay Wall, Quilters Without Leaders. That's this woman's Instagram handle, and she has some strong feelings about the Modern Quilt Guild, and I referenced this interview earlier in the episode. It's a very thoughtful interview, and if you are in the Modern Quilt Guild, it's worth listening to and pondering. I don't know that I have strong feelings after listening to it, like, oh, our local guild should not be part of the national guild. I think that leaders of the national guild would actually do well to listen to this interview themselves and think about what are we offering our member organizations. And local guilds can ponder that too. What are local guilds getting from the national organization? So it's an interview that, if you're a modern quilter, if you're in a local modern quilt guild group, worth listening to. If you're someone who just enjoys knowing what the buzz is all about right now, also worth listening to. I think Katie did a great job interviewing this woman, and I thought this woman, at first I was a little like, you know, again, this interview came out right after I got two quilts in QuiltCon, and she's actually not against QuiltCon, so I'm like, all right, then we're cool. In fact, that's what she thinks at the National Modern Quilt Guild. That should just be their shtick, is QuiltCon. I thought she was thoughtful. At first, when I first started listening, I was a little bit like, argh. But as I listened to the whole interview, I thought, she's got a point here. And at the end, she did talk about, the people say, why are you so concerned about this? Why, when the world, given what the world is, why get all up in arms about the Modern Quilt Guild? And it's a fair question. And she's sort of like that. She feels it's an injustice. And, and it is what gets her going. So I don't know. I liked her. I thought Katie did an excellent job. So worth listening to, worth pondering. The other thing is I realized, and this is actually, today is Tuesday, it's the next day after yesterday is what day it is, and I realized that I did not thank people who commented on my last episode, and I so appreciate your comments, as you well know, and I wanted to say that Jody is the winner of the 2000th episode, no, the 200th episode giveaway. Yay, Jody. She lives in Switzerland, and her husband is getting her birds in the air for Christmas, so I'm going to send her a copy of my first book, Devico. I do want to say thanks to everyone, including Laura and Nancy, who loves hearing about Travis. Thank you, Nancy. Heard from Noni and Judy. Heard from Kelly, Margaret K., Andra. Last time I said Andra, and I was wrong. It's Andra, but she was very cool about it. Thank you, Andra. Heard from Sharon D. Heard from Hillary and Patty. From Terry. Terry, I feel like I've known you so long, and I still want to say Terje. It's T-E-R-J-E, the spelling, not the pronunciation. Heard from Jody, our big winner, and Kristen and Linda and the wonderful Kelly the Fifth. So thank you everyone for commenting, for stopping by, thank you to those of you who comment in your head. Stop by sometime and leave a written comment just to say, yeah, I comment in my head. Do you hear me? And I'll say, yes, I do. You can also email me at fdal@nc.rr.com. I would love to hear from you. I enjoy hearing from you, but mostly I'm just glad you're listening. So away we go. Thanks for listening to the Off Kilter Quilt. Come visit me online at offkilterquilt.com. Until next time, this is Frances. Remember, life is short. Quilt first.